Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to The Smiley Show. I am very happy to be joined by James Seekman. He was my short game coach, still is to this day. And James, our journey, not only did it start when I was professional, but it started when I was probably, 12, 13 years old was the first time you laid eyes on a young whippersnapper of Smiley Kaufman at Shoal Creek?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The par three course at Shoal Creek. And I should tell you the story because I'm not so sure you even know, but you got 2 minutes to hear this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I get this random phone call maybe it's like November. And he said, hey, I'm Alan Kaufman. I'm the coach at UAB. So that's your granddad, obviously. And he said, I got your name from Steve Lowry, who I coached on the PGA Tour. And he's from Birmingham. He's a member at Greystone there. Lives at Greystone. I don't know. And I got this player that needs short game help. He's a great player. And I asked Steve, who's the best short game coach in the country? And he gave me your name. So he says, would you come down and work with this player? So I set up a couple weeks later a day to work with Steve. And then a follow-up day to work with this player. And I went out to Shoal Creek. And this kid just wore my ass out. I was like 5 hours. And it was like, what about this lie? What do you do when the sand is soft? What do you do in northern grasses when it's into the grain? And, there's a million questions. He wouldn't let me go. So I worked 5 hours with him. And then there's like 8 other kids standing on the team over the side. And I had like 3 hours left. I'm like, hey, coach, I got 3 hours. I'm done, you know. And the other kids are like, hey, do you need any questions, any help, anybody struggling with their putting? Or all 8 of them go like, no, I'm good, which is crazy. Wow. So the guy that wanted the help was Graham McDowell.
Okay. I knew that was going to be the answer.
Yeah. And that year, he won the Hogan Award as the best player in college. And none of that set the all-time scoring record in college scoring average for a season, like 68.5 for the season. And so I always tell that story. I told a golf magazine top 100 thing because, like, the great player wanted to be coached. He wanted to be coached up hard, and he couldn't get enough. And the guys that were just okay, they didn't want to be uncomfortable. They were like, no, I'm good. You know, surely somebody has a question. Like, how do you prepare a yardage book for a major championship? How do you, there's got to be a question somewhere, right? But they were good. So anyway, so I go to your granddad. I'm like, well, listen, everybody's good. I got 3 more hours or whatever. And he goes, well, would you mind working with my 2 grandkids? So your brother's lucky, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Is he older or younger?
He's younger. He's 2 years younger. I had no idea lucky was a part of the lesson.
Yeah, no, he was. So I think I worked with you for maybe 2 hours, and I think I worked with Lucky for 1. And you were maybe 12. He was maybe like 10 or something like that.
Oh, man.
And, anyway, so that was our start, and it was still going. So I don't know. That was like 20 years ago, maybe. Right.
Holy moly. Well, 2 questions there. So Graham McDowell, did he have the frosted tips still at the time when you were giving him this lesson? Cause he used to have like the Ian Poulter frosted tips look. I don't know if you recall what he looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't laugh about that.
You know, the funny thing is I know he's a flusher, and I just so stricken by the fact that the great player couldn't get enough. And the guys, I mean, think about how complicated, how hard golf is, right? There's so much to do, whether it's how do you you know, how do you get the right foods at the right time during your round? What about water, preparing a book? How would you prepare for an unusual course if you get one? I mean, there's so many questions a guy would have. And then there's eight kids that didn't, you know, you brought this guy in that's supposed to be an expert, and they don't have one question. It was just mind-boggling to me.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about just you and I and how you've kind of mentored and coached me over the years. And we just talked about the 12-year-old me, and you probably don't remember that lesson at all. I do remember the lesson a little bit, but my question to you is, from that time until, let's say, now, you know, what stands out just about the development of my short game and just how far we've come, I guess, as a pair.
Yeah, I would say, first off, you're a great student. Obviously, you can't teach talent, and you had that up the zoo. And I would say when you're on, I put your short game. I've coached Smiley 100. I counted up the other day for a magazine piece. 128 different pros on the tour. And when you're on, wedge game for sure, putting, you had years where you putted phenomenal. I put you up against anybody. And I don't know if you feel that the same way, but I mean,
no, I definitely did.
Short game was going as good as anybody, you know, Pernice or anybody that I've ever seen. So the key there is, I remember that we started in the bunker there at Shoal Creek. There's a par three kind of up the hill. There's a bunker on the left-hand side of the green. And I think the key to anything, especially at a young age, is to understand what the foundational pieces are. You can't be simply, it feels this way today, because feelings change over time. We're malleable. So if the foundations are written out, and I don't know if you recall, but I gave you notes, because I brought notes for everybody.
I had them for years.
And we would write down whatever it is we came up with, like, okay, this is how we're going to line up. We're going to line up square instead of to the left, which is something foundationally I feel is, we're going to get our toes out. We're going to sit. We're going to, you know, make a big enough swing where we can extend or cup the wrist, which is this little thing right here, which you know, creates, well, when you release that angle, it creates dynamic loft and speed and spin. And so we went through it all, and I'm sure we wrote it down. And then I would say your job at that point is to get, you know, 1% better at it every time you practice without becoming distracted. Now, it's the last part of that is the important part, and it's the hard part, because results can distract you. You blade one bunker shot at the wrong time, and it's easy to kind of go, oh, my gosh, something's wrong. It's like, no, let's just do what we said we're going to do better. And I think that's where you and I, even though golf is a journey that with both highs and lows in it, it's really important, like what happens during the low times. You know, we had, like I said, in college, you might have putted as good as anybody on the earth. But there are times as a pro where the putter got cold. So now what do you do? Well, you don't go away from your foundational pieces. You just reassess and like, which one am I not doing? And then you might have a different way where you walk in. I remember when you did go a little cold, you won a Korn Ferry event. Then you played beautifully right at the beginning. One in Vegas, you know, and then at some point the putter went a little cold and we started talking about like, okay, do I put my right in? Do I aim with my right hand only and then step in? You know, I'm sure you remember all that. You probably still have that clear. But so you learn different ways to get your mind right. And I would call that playing without distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Results clear. I'm committed. I got a picture of the cup, you know, that sort of thing. But the foundational pieces, hopefully we're set at 10 years old and they haven't changed, or they shouldn't change very often. You know, if you change one thing on your list, it might be the third or fourth year. It's not like the third week, or most players at a club, they change three times in a day. You know, they got a different swing. Come on. They got a different swing on the fourth tee because the first three holes, they played five over, you know, and they're trying the new swing on four. And that's a recipe for disaster. I don't care if you have, you know, so,
well, and one of the things that I recall right from the get go is how you would set up practice. You know, this was something that as a kid, you know, I just threw balls on the green. I loved to compete. That was something that you and I always connected on. But it was like kind of towards the end of how you know, I found myself to prepare every single week. And how you typically would set it up, it would be, you know, we'd have our block practice, we'd have our random practice, and then we would go compete. And for those that are trying to get better in the game of golf, specifically, let's say the short game, you know, what to you stands out about how you learned this as a way to make players improve? Because, you know, you have all this information, James, that you learned, but also it's like, all right, now how do I take this and make a tour player better?
Right. Well, not just a tour player, Smiley, but every single player. So I have three rules for anybody that works with me. And rule number two is you got to get value from the time you invest. Rule one was to define your foundational pieces. And three is you got to play distraction free. So they're your three rules. So if we're going to get value from our practice time, it has to be structured so that you're accomplishing specific things and there's a proper order to it. So the first piece, as you mentioned, block practice is like, okay, my foundations are defined in the bunker. I'm going to do these four things. I got to check and make sure I'm actually doing those four things. And that means a learning environment. I'm being mindful of the mechanics, detail oriented, and I'm checking off my list. Yes, I'm doing one. Yes, I'm doing two. Yes, I've done all four things. The goal of that type of practice, a lot of people get this wrong, is actually to be done as quickly as you can. It's to confirm that you're doing them. It's not to relearn how to do it. That happens the first time, and then that amount takes what it takes. So if it takes you 4 hours to learn it, then we're going to stay there for 4 hours until you do. But once you've learned it, that's motor control. Motor learning happens when you show up the next day without the coach and you set up your block practice station and you check everything, and those feels are, you know, they happen again. They strengthen. So 95% of what you know in life is intrinsic, Smile. It's subconscious. It's like, I know it, but I don't know how. I'm going to give you a 52 degree. You're going to run it up over this hill and it's going to go up and break left to right. And you got to figure out the right trajectory and landing spot and how much it's going to break. You know, how do you know how much? How do you know where to land it? Well, the answer is, you know, because you do. I can just tell, right? And that's what good sports is. So 95% of what you know in life is that it's not your cerebral cortex going, let me do this math formula. It's like I can sense that if I land it just left of the brown spot, it's going to run up and curve and go in. So the question becomes, in your practice, whether you're Smiley Kaufman or somebody at the club, how do you develop and improve that skill, that sense of what to do? And the key is it's not one after the other in a pile because you're only getting one rep of what's happening. So I'll tell you a couple stories about, and then so we do random practice, develop that skill set, that ability to judge, feel, touch, focus, and then we win our way off the green. And that's more my thing of just, I feel like there's a ton of value in winning and winning every day and making it a habit. But I'll tell you two quick stories. So one time I was at the British Open and I was going around, I asked Ricky Fowler, like, how'd you get so good at short game? Because he grew up with Tom Pernice at the same course with one of my students. And he goes, well, basically threw balls everywhere and I just screwed off. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly how you should be practicing. You just like try every random shot you could try. So Ricky's not in a pile going like, how do I swing? He's like being super creative. Fair? That's what most people do. But if you think about how most people practice, Smiley, they've got to have one club. The other clubs are in their bag. They're hitting the same shot over and over, or they're in a spot where they should be playing a 52 and they got their 60 out, and now they're playing the wrong shot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what we did after we did our warm-up, we did a lap around the green. I did this with Russell Henley in Hawaii. We did two laps around the green. The three clubs he's going to possibly use, and I tried to pick every crazy shot I could pick, like
feet up, just test them,
up
test
slope, them. Sitting down in the down slope, like across a slope. I said, okay, now I want to see three bounces before it hits the green. So what club would you use if you're going to have three bounces before it gets to the green? You know, so you're trying to challenge their creativity and their shot making skill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number two. And then winning is fun and your focus goes up. And I don't know about you, but when I play golf, if I'm going to do it for 30 years, I want to have as much fun as I can. I don't want to be out there. So the story there would be, I was giving a lesson to a kid at the back of the range at Monterey Peninsula Country Club during the tournament. Mm-hmm. And it was a pros kid, and he was miserable. He was not making good contact. He's like throwing F-bombs and, you know, just being sour. And I was feeling sorry for myself as a coach. And up walks Padre Carrington with his caddy. This is the back of the range at Monterey Peninsula. And he hits a few, then he disappears. Then, like, 30 seconds later, I see him hitting shots off the wood chipped cart path. Okay?
Okay, yeah.
So it's like hitting off the – and then I disappear. And then I see these balls flying over the hedge. There's a hedge back there. He's on the wrong side trying to whip balls over the hedge onto the green. And then later, it's a true story. There's a tree back there. He's trying to ricochet balls off the tree onto the green. So I turned to the kid and I said, okay, listen, 3-time major champion, having a blast, and you are the most miserable human I've ever seen, and you're so hyperventilating on your contact. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's really the things that, when we talk about getting value, the lessons that can be learned, I think, for not only the tour player, but everybody. You don't want to be that miserable kid. You want to be Ricky Fowler or Padre Carrington, just having a blast, trying to figure out different ways to do it, you know?
Yeah, and you also kind of briefly mentioned Russell Henley, and I thought that was interesting because, you know, he had a chance to win at the Sony Open, and I'm sitting there, as I normally do when I catch up with the group, I go through their stats to see, like, what are they doing well that week? And when we had dinner early in the week, you said that Russell was just really struggling in the dormant that we always do in the wintertime here in the South. It's just hard to chip. So he's kind of confused on contact. But like you said, you do the competing around the green. He gets better. And I was looking at his stats and showed up and I'm like, what the heck? Whatever he told him, it worked because he's first around the greens this week and he hit the sauciest bunker shot on 15 I've ever seen. It was obviously it's got to be satisfying as a coach to show up where a player is confused and then they go out and are be able to take it into competition.
And you know, luckily Russell's hired me for the year, so we had good experience. He said, "Okay, great, let's do it again." But I'll say this: the real issue was, you know, he's basically in that dormant, wet Georgia dead.
Oh God!
He's basically chipping off mud. You know, after you do that for a while, you're finding a way to like pick it off, right? And so he's kind of dropping it underneath, and he sends me a video from like the week before Kapalua, like, hey, I'm sculling these shots. And then of course now you're worried, you're distracted, you're worried about, am I going to scull it, am I going to hit it off fat off this mud? And first thing I told him, I said, listen, you're going to be fine in Hawaii because it's going to seem easy, so just quit practicing, quit, just go putt, do, you know. But I said, listen, we'll connect in Hawaii and I'll show you, you know. So we did. So he was, ball was a little forward and he's dropping the club a little underneath in the downswing. And it is too shallow, but I think he's developed it because he's trying not to dig into the mud.
That's probably why.
Elite athletes can figure out. So anyway, I just showed him how to train. We defined his foundation, showed him how to train. I said, we're going to do laps around the green and I'm going to make hit every crazy shot you can hit. And you're going to describe the shot to me before you hit it. What club, what trajectory, where you're going to land it, how much it's going to break and what side of the hole it's going to go in at. And so he had to verbalize that to me. We probably did that for an hour. And now all of a sudden he's playing golf, hitting shots instead of hyper focused on his swing or the contact or all the, you know, he's playing like a 12-year-old as opposed to
exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I was texting you live updates. If we weren't there live with Russell, I was like, hey, great, he just hit a great chip or he hit a great bunker shot. I was like very excited for you that he was having so much success. And I know you had fun watching that, but transition quickly over to Augusta National because this to me, I think I don't have the success I had at my only run at the Masters. Was I credit most of it to you because of all of the work that you did really probably the years prior to when I got there, going around Augusta National with Charlie Hoffman. And as we know with Charlie, he had a ton of success there as well. Augusta National to you, I mean, what have you learned about that place over the years and the strategies involved that tempt players, but also just kind of what you've come to learn?
Well, you're exactly right. So for one of the things that the course changes a lot from Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday to Friday to Saturday. And so that's one of the things you got to be prepared for as a player. But you cannot do proper prep work, show up on a Monday with all those people. So one of the things I've learned with Charlie is we had always gone the week prior when the course was as close to, you know, they're getting the thing ready for the tournament. And we would go 18 holes with just the wedges and the putter. Leave all the clubs in the clubhouse. I got the wedges and the putter. And we would chart every pin location, where the quality position is relative to that, the breaks, the strategies, you know. And so I did that probably with him for 5 years. I probably had done it with Bernice before that. But so when you arrived on the scene, I had that experience set in there. And
I was ready.
We decided and we had talked it through. It's like, we're going to go the week before. And so we met up, I think, the Saturday before the tournament week. And we went around the course. Maybe it was the Friday. And we did exactly that. We charted all the pins. We chipped every pin. We putted every pin. And I remember how well you were driving it that week, too, which has nothing to do with me. But you did. You were ready, short game-wise, and prepared. And so one of the things in any sport preparation does, if you talk to a basketball coach or whatever, is preparation breeds confidence, and confidence breeds commitment. So if you don't really, truly feel prepared, and remember, 95% of what you know is subconscious, intrinsic. So you know whether you're truly prepared or not. So whether it's a basketball game or a foot, whatever, you knew you were prepared for that week because you had done the work. And you can't cheat it. It can't be just me saying, hey, on one, if there's that right Sunday pin in the middle, you can't hit it past. If we miss, we're going to miss to the right, but you can't hit it deeper than 28 on the green because then you get behind the tier. I could say that to you, but if we are over there practicing those shots the week prior, then you get that Sunday pin and you know exactly what your strategy is going into that green, you know? So you gotta do the work. And that's one thing I learned. I got another story. Can I tell it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're here for.
So I got upset. I'm not going to name that one of my players a few years ago who showed up late, new caddy. Caddy had never seen the course, and he did a media, and our lesson was supposed to be, and then we ended up doing the lesson on the course. It was awful. And I told him after, I said, listen, I'm not happy about what just happened. He missed the cut. He goes, me neither. I'm glad you said that. I said, let me tell you a story about being a pro's pro. So I heard this from Craig Chalmers. Craig Chalmers goes over to the Hamburg Open in Germany to play. It's a Sunday prior to the, you know, the tournament week. And he goes out to chip and putt just to kind of shake off the travel. And he's walking around with his putter and a wedge. And he sees Bernhard Langer out on the golf course with a notebook, taking notes, walking around, taking notes. Same thing, putter and a wedge. Now, this is a Hamburg Open. Bernhard Langer's 2 times master champ. He doesn't need to be preparing for the Hamburg Open, right?
Mm-mm. You wouldn't think so.
Greg Chalmers goes back to like, hey, Bernard, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just making sure my notes are right, yada, yada. So he goes back to the hotel and he's wasting time on the internet, Googling the tournament course designer, Bernhard Langer. So Bernhard Langer, who's a pro's pro, is checking his notes for the course he designed to make sure they're right 5 days before the tournament starts. I mean, that's similar to what you did.
Very meticulous. Right? Very meticulous.
I'm just saying he's a pro. He's a pro.
Yeah.
You know? So there you go.
And I have to get to the story as well about Augusta. You know, being prepared is one thing, but sometimes you're just your mind and your body isn't quite right. And thank goodness I had you there because you and I had our normal putting session. And we did it on the top, which, you know, there's a great practice facility at Augusta National. And you always said, if you're going to putt, go behind 9 and 18.
Right. The original green is more like the course. It's different than the new one they built, I think.
Right. And so you and I, we've done our block training. We did some random, probably did okay in that, maybe a miss or two here and there, which for the most part the star drill that we would do would be 4 to 6 feet for the most part. Out of 5 putts, I would normally, or 10 putts, I would make 7 to 8 for the most part every time. And then we go compete. And for the most part, I was pretty good about winning the drills that we would do. But for whatever reason, this day on a Monday or Tuesday morning when there's 200 people watching us right. go through this routine, I mean, I am just all over the place. I'm at the time probably one of the best lag putters on tour, meaning if I got a 40 footer, it's going to end up with a tap in for the most part. And I'm putting it off the green. I'm 3-putting all this. I'm missing the short ones. And after, do you recall what you said to me?
I was like, I know I don't, but I probably was like, go take 3 Advil and have a Coke or something. I don't know.
No, it was some form of, we kind of just had to like sit back and be, you were just kind of like, all right, we're dissecting this. It's like, everything looks good. There's no reason to freak out. Did you do anything different this morning? And I was like, you know what? Instead of 2 or 1 a leave, I did take 2. And you're like, you know what? That's it. You had 2 leave this morning. So you're just a little jittery. Did you eat any food? It's like, not as much as I normally did. Any coffee? It was like, yeah, a little bit. He's like, that's it. That's all it was. And we walked right off of that green and we said, you know what? It was a win that we didn't walk off that green with losing confidence.
That's right. That's fine. Listen. Sports is performed at that level on a razor's edge, right? It's on a razor's edge. And little things matter, right? And and the reality is I probably was just like trying to like, please God, give me something to say to him so he's not freaking out. But realize that might be exactly
what I bought it. I bought it.
No, that might be exactly what's going on. It's like, hey, let's not hit the panic button. You know, everything's great. Let's just, you know, to get our nutrition right and our rest and our, you know, caffeine. You know, that might be exactly right.
It works. And I guess this to me is, you know, like James, you were a player, your brother was a player on tour, and you have all this information that you've mastered your craft. And I'm not sure how long it took you to really master exactly how you taught the short game, but it evolved over the years. But just speaking to what we were just talking about and coaching tour players, what was that jump like as far as like figuring out how to coach a tour player, how to coach elite athletes versus, you know, if a Joe Schmo comes, it's probably easy for you to just give that information. And the coaching is just, you know, developing a plan like we talked about. But we're talking about the best players in the world and managing their emotions and also how they, you know, go about their processes. Was that a tough transition for you? Was it easy?
It was a learning curve. You know, it's easier if you're competent, and this is sound like self-aggrandizing, but to me, if you're competent, it's easier to coach a tour player than as an amateur, because I tell you what to do in the bunker. It's either going to work right away if it's the correct thing, or if it's the wrong thing, it's not working right away. It's like you can't fake it. So you got to be right. And the other reason we got to be right is obviously they're trying to pay their mortgage with how they play golf. So that aspect of it I liked. I mean, if I said the right thing, we're going to know in 3 minutes, right? You're not going to have to work on it for a month to find out. Well, sometimes an amateur, there might be a mobility issue that you're working around that you know, they just can't do. So that part is better about working with a pro. One of the major differences is from a coaching standpoint is, what am I going to teach you on Tuesday when you got to tee it up in front of thousands of people on Thursday, and it's got to be easy to do, right? So you coach differently on a Tuesday than you would maybe on an off week. If we met in Omaha and we had 3 weeks off before your next event, I could certainly take more on and dive a little deeper, and we could pick it apart and put it back together quicker, or not quicker, but more thoroughly than Tuesday. I'm like, what's going to be easy to do that's going to have a positive benefit that he can do and be confident with this afternoon? And that took a few years, that skill set as a coach, to develop compared to, you know, the other.
But so not like overcoach, like not overcoaching.
It's the worst thing you can do. So it's one reason why I only go out to a tour event once a month, because like the only thing worse than not having a coach is to be overcoached, getting too much, right? And that's far worse. So I'm always very cognizant of trying to keep it simple, trying to keep it to, you know, digestible bites, trying to, and I think I always feel like this, why Butch Harmon was such a great coach, is that he, his players walked away more confident after a session.
Yeah.
So more certain, more clear, more confident. So that's really your job. And that's maybe not exactly the job if, like I said, if it's off season and you're trying to build foundational things where you're more repeatable, more control. And that, then you're diving a little deeper into maybe the physics of how you deliver a club, so to speak.
Well, yeah, that all makes a ton of sense. And for those of you that are listening to this podcast, we are going to transition into the more of a visual. We're going to have some videos that are going to play here in a minute. We're going to kind of dissect the putting, short game, and bunker. But before we get there, one last question is, you know, we kind of talked about how you learned your craft and learning the short game. And you always mentioned to me Seve Ballesteros. And I just wanted to hear your story on you watching Seve back in the day and how you were able to kind of figure out what he did and realize, wait, I've been doing this my whole life wrong, just watching Seve do everything.
And I was good. I didn't have problems. You know, I played, it was good college player, played in Asia. But so essentially it's kind of interesting. My brother's 10 years older than I. He played 7 years on the European Tour, finally got his PGA Tour card, you know, after 7 years of playing in Europe, and played 11 years on the PGA Tour. Well, actually, before he played in Europe, as a 20-year-old or whatever, when he turned pro, 21, he was in Bogota, Colombia, playing a tournament. He runs into a 17-year-old Seve, and they could, my brother could speak Spanish, so they, you know, they interacted, became friends. And so for 7 years on the European Tour, my brother and Seve Ballesteros would do dinner, or they do practice rounds together, just like you do with your friends when you played on the tour. So fast forward, now I'm 18. I'm caddying for my brother at Wingfoot in the U.S. Open, and we played two practice rounds with Seve Ballesteros. It was great. We had dinner together. They practiced together. They did practice rounds together, and I'm seeing now a magician around the greens. And I wasn't smart enough at the time to, like, oh, I'm going to take notes or take videos, but it was just cool. And then actually Tom Pernice was part of that click as well a little bit. So fast forward, I'm 28 years old, and I had plenty of interactions where they would practice and I'd just watch, basically.
Right.
In that 10-year period. But now I'm 28, I'm getting married, I'm going to open my own golf academy, and I go, I have no idea what I'm going to teach. So I had the idea of, like, well, I'm caddying for my brother at the Players. I'm going to bring my video camera and I'm going to video every great player that I can. Well, sure enough, two practice rounds with Seve Ballesteros at the Players, and they practiced together. So I had, it was a VHS set, like a, you know, like a, you know, Channel 3, you know, it was a huge thing. But I took basically probably 6 hours of video of him just hitting little shots around the green. And I also got Raymond Floyd and Corey Pavin and the guys that could really go, and realized as I was watching those tapes, I studied those tapes for like 4 months between, I was kind of before I opened, just trying to figure out what they did. Why was he so amazing? Where maybe I'd call myself average. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you're right. The stuff I thought was true is not even remotely true. Your head does not stay still. In a chip shot, it moves forward, then it moves down and up, you know, and that's what I was noticing. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. You know, I thought you're supposed to keep your head still. Dumb stuff like that. So I put together my approach and my beliefs, Smiley, as far as short game. Putting maybe came a bit later, but, you know, the reality is it was a pharaoh. Everybody's like, you're teaching what? That's not, I'm like, yeah, no, this is what I see Seve and Raymond Floyd do. This is what I'm going to. And they go, no, that's not right. So it took a while, but I think most people kind of are more in agreement with some of the things I teach now.
Oh, it's definitely, I think most people would agree this is like the way to pitch. And we're about to get into the video side of this podcast, where you can watch on our YouTube page. And James, I'll ask you this. Do you happen to have a video of Seve in the files?
I have a couple old ones. Now, it's kind of off angle. And I have a picture, but yeah, if you want me to share my screen here?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so here's a really young Sebby, you know. And one of the things I've taught or I learned when I started studying is how when you're on an upslope like he is, clearly, that you need to shallow the delivery. You know, Smiley, we had talked about how the angle of attack of the, you know, if this is the ground and, mm-hmm. you know, the golf ball, this may not work because the golf ball's there. Mm-hmm. And as you come down and you're doing it correctly on a flat lie, like the angle of attack down is like 6 degrees, right?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
If you're on an upslope, that's upslope is adding, steepening the angle. So one of the things you have to do is shallow it out. So one of the things you see on an upslope, I call this the Raymond Floyd shot when I taught you, it'd be like, look how yep. left he's lined up. I mean, crazy left. And so relative to his body, he's feeling like he's really swinging inside out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
relative to the target, it might not be off plane, but you see the toe up in the air, which is one of the things I've always loved. And you can see how quiet his legs are there in the transition. And so he's shallowing the delivery on this upslope, basically swinging more along the slope. And, of course, that upslope helps push the ball up in the air. So that would be an example of studying video of Sebby and going, oh, wow, this is curious. I wonder how it's that way, you know.
There wasn't ever a time where I didn't have an uphill chip shot where I didn't think, okay, this is the Raymond Floyd shot. I would say it in my head every single time. It would open up and just get a little into out.
I can't tell you how smart that is, Smiley, because one of the things that we always want to do is be clear and committed. And so when you call your shot, so to speak, let's mm-hmm. say Larry Bird's playing Michael Jordan and they're just Larry Bird, period. Like, I'm going to shoot left-handed and I'm going to bank it in. You know, he would call his shot, right? So is there's commitment all of a sudden, right? I just told you mm-hmm. what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit the Raymond Floyd shot and I'm going to land it just on the green. And, you know, all right. So can I go through this one with Wander Bonlahiri? Is this okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just right. roll through whatever you so got.
You mentioned earlier block practice. So this is block practice. And the way you know is that he's got a line that he's made in the sand with his club to check his ball position and his alignment. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, here's something that most people are not going to like, but it's the truth. Thinking and sports go horrible together. You cannot think and be a good player. You think in the preparation phase or the planning phase of your shot, but over the shots, you don't want to think. You want to feel. You have pictures and sensations are amazing in sports, but like thoughts are no good. So when Onderbaum gets in and he's doing his block practice, he's going to feel the movement pattern that he needs to execute this shot. And he's rehearsing it in his mind. Now, his eyes might even be closed here. He's feeling the movement. All right. That's the movement. And now he's going to execute. Now, let me tell you before I play that what he's feeling. All right. So you do not want to deliver from under. In a bunker, you're going to alternate between hitting fat and scrolling across the green. So he's created stability in this left quad by turning his toes out and sitting and putting his weight there. Okay. He's doing that actually at address. I like a big old turn where he kind of keeps the club in front of his chest. Mm-hmm. Nice full wrist hinge. And now he's unwinding this shoulders and chest into the inside part of his quad. He's feeling that movement. Now, what happens if you spin your hips instead? The club lays down and you deliver from inside. So he stabilizes his lower body. He's turning into his left leg. And then once you can only go so far turning into that leg. And then once he hits that kind of breaking point, he's going to fire that club head. He's going to release the crud out of it. And then let's see if I can move this. And
now you mentioned a real cupped left wrist as well to be able to deliver it with some dynamic loft.
A video of you out of the bunker, they'll stop sharing, and I want you to play, and then we'll look at that cupped wrist if you don't mind. All right, so stability in the leg, turning the chest into the knee, and then firing the club and rehinging. So good bunker mm-hmm. players get the club in and out of the sand in a hurry, and they go from that hinged cupped left wrist to unhinging and rehinging quickly. And you can see both feet are still on the ground, right? So there's the stability.
Right.
It's completely different than a normal one. Yeah. Why don't you do this, if you don't mind? I'm going to stop that. And why don't you pull up your video, your bunker shot? We'll go through that.
That's perfect. Yeah, I would say like the one thing that I always would feel in the bunker was trying to keep my head, like something was holding me up on my right side to keep me on the left side, to keep me from backing up.
Is there any way to stop that video like halfway or at the top of your backswing? Yeah. Now, here's the extended left wrist. That's perfect. So the left wrist, when it has that cup in it, it's called extension. And if you thought of Dustin Johnson or John Rahm, they'd be in flexion, right? Mm-hmm. So in the bunker, yep. If you're in extension like this, if you look at the face of the club, it looked like it on the wrong side of the shaft. It's pointing over here towards the palm tree. And of course, if you hit a 5-iron like that, you'd hit a 90-yard slice, right? So one of the things you have to understand is that the delivery in the bunker is completely different than the delivery of a normal golf shot, a 5-iron shot. Then if you could, I don't know if we could stop it, but at least slow it, is that in the delivery, because your lower body's stable, the club head will pop down through your hands or outside of it and exit way over here to the left. It should exit right over here under your left shoulder. And you can see how far left that throw is, right?
So I always felt like my right arm was, or right, my right hand felt like it was underneath at the bottom, and then I would use it basically just throwing the back of the club, and feel like I was throwing sand over my left shoulder.
The back of the club will hit the sand because you're an extension and you're letting it pass, right? So it's that.
Yeah.
Do you have the face on one? Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, here it is.
First off, you can always tell by the audio, right? When you hear it, it's like that clack. And that's speed in the back of the club, smacking the sand. So same thing, toes out sitting, nice big turn. Left leg is – a lot of people – you know, so in a full swing, you would post on that leg. You'd push down. The vertical force would help you straighten the leg. Well, in the bunker, the left leg not only stays flexed, but it actually increases its flex and moves towards the pin. So if you're looking at your left knee there, it's flexed. It stays flexed, and it actually moves over to the outside of your left toe.
Seek, I think one of the – besides just being a very good coach, I think one of the things I think you're best at is teaching players – about the lies that they have. So for instance, downslope versus upslope, a lot of sand versus not a whole lot of sand, short-sided bunker shots, long bunker shots, what's our plan? And I think like for you, let's just start with like sand thickness, and then we'll maybe go to downslope, upslope, and kind of how you attack those things.
And not just thickness, Smiley, but like soft versus brick hard, you know, sometimes rain, then the courses don't do
Vegas
a really
was
job
always no sand.
It's like, and it's brick hard. So you always have your base foundational technique, and let's call that Augusta National sand. Like it's perfect, okay? But then you have to adapt or change slightly for varying conditions. So when you have firm hard, you need to steepen the delivery, slow the swing down, because the firm sand is going to make the ball come out fast, right? And the problem with that is if you get the face too open on firm sand, then it overbounces and the ball goes forever. So you got to like slightly square, like really steep and slow. Well, the opposite,
like swinging in an elevator.
The opposite would be true in super soft or thick sand. The ball comes out slow. So you would defer down. We would defer down to your 55 degree wedge, right? Might widen your arc. You might feel your arms more in front of you. So you have a little bit more width and a little bit more U-shaped delivery instead of a V-shaped delivery. And if you know it's coming to come out slow, you need add bounce. So we'd open that face up more, right? And you might have to increase the speed. So those are kind of the basics. And then, like I showed you that video of Seve hitting a little finesse shot off an upslope. Well, he shallowed the delivery. Well, on an upslope, you might have to shallow the delivery a little bit. On a downslope, you'd steepen the delivery while still keeping the loft on the club, which is kind of the hard part, right? So we'd widen out, we'd lean, keep the ball forward. We would lean hard on that left knee and get that club maybe up and a little more out. So you could throw a little more to the left, which steepens the delivery. But once again, you get the ball up in the air, you still got to have that face wide open. So
down slopes was always like fade, more bias, more cutty, and then upslope was always more draw bias.
Right. exactly right. So now, literally, if we're coming full circle, we're really just having a discussion again about Ricky Fowler. Hey, Ricky, how'd you get so good? Well, I threw balls everywhere, and I basically like screwed off. So if you're in a pile in the middle of the bunker hitting shot after shot, Smiley, you're not developing the skills you need to be a good tour player, because the very first hole, the ball's 6 inches below your feet, and you know you got to go off angle across the green. You know what I'm saying? And the next one, it's like a huge upslope. So literally what we would do in training is we would do your line like honor bond. We go through our foundational checks, literally might hit three good shots with each club, three with the 60, three with the 55. And then we would play crazy shots. Okay. Upslope across the green. Okay. Downslope, short-sided. Okay. Buried. Okay. What do we do? And we'd scoop sand out of one area and say, okay, there's not a lot of sand here. What would you, you know? And so we would practice that. And it's not, as a coach, you know, I've never hit a shot. It's not me. But if I can, and if I can provide an environment where you can learn and really learn it on your own, like you didn't get it, let's try one more time. Oh gosh, that time I failed it, coach. Well, then I know I can go away, and then 3 weeks later, if you happen to be facing a situation like that, that you, same deal, like you're prepared to execute. And that's all you're trying to do as a coach is like, you're not trying to put a coach's head on a player's shoulder. What you're trying to do is you're trying to create kind of a learning environment where they feel confident and adept at every scenario or situation.
Yes, and the I couldn't agree more. And I think the next kind of part of this is looking at some pitching videos. And
now, when we're pitching, are we hitting how far here, Smiley?
Well, this is just this pitch would probably be a 2.5 or a 3 on the 1-4 scale,
right? From so 20 yards.
This is probably 20 yard target. Probably land it.
The problem is, 15 is yards. These are all in high speed, aren't they?
Yes. So if you got slow-mos, let's go to those if you want to.
You can play it, and let me see if I can just see that video. I can't see it. It's
Is it not playing for you?
Well, it plays, but it sticks, and it's not fluid, and now you're
– okay, yeah. Let's just go to yours then.
All right. So, Smiley, if I recall, I think this is Bethpage Black, is it not?
You know what? I was trying to think in my head where it was. Well, it's 100% Bethpage Black.
Or New York. I think it is.
Bethpage. It's Bethpage.
Yeah, across the road. So Bethpage Black. So this is a playoff event, I believe. And one of the things I love here, so I always have a checkpoint. If we're going to, you know, pop the ball up in the air, spin it, I want the face open to the path. So if you're talking about delivery, right? So that means the toe of the backswing has got to be up in the air. Well, so once again, that's a horrible thing to do for a 5-iron. The club in front of you, so you're really controlling the radius of your swing, right? It's reproducing. So if we're looking from a foundational point of view, like narrow open stance, not just your feet, but also your chest. You always felt best when like there was connection between your arms and your body, a little bit more like Steve Stricker, right? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what to do. You felt a little disconnected, I think, here. So I grabbed your golf towel and I wadded up in a ball and I stuck it between your arms to try and help you feel this connection. Right. So this is just probably a standard, like stock trajectory two trajectory shot, toe up through your hands, on plane delivery, face open to the path, angles are coming out. So you're releasing the club. And, if this is your block practice, then what you're doing is creating a sensation or a feeling. So later in the tournament, you didn't have to think. You could feel the towel.
One of the things that I always, like, the feeling I had here is that I always hated when my arms felt like they outraced my chest on the way back. So when it felt like my arms were connected to my pivot on the way back, it always felt like I could then just focus on having a flex left knee and delivering the club face properly.
Right. Well, number one, the plane is amazing. The face to path relationship is correct. And the like I said, maintaining the radius of your circle, because it's kind of connected to your chest, is so easy. You're not down cocking that thing. But watch your face. Watch how it lifts. And it's not just your face. It's called extending. You're extending your chest. All great. Remember I said you don't keep your head still when you chip? All great pitchers make room for the delivery. So they all in their delivery lift up a little bit as they rotate their chest, and you'll see that. And basically that creates freedom. Now, I don't tell players to lift. I tell them, hey, freedom through the bottom of your swing. Feel the flow through your, you know, through your feet, basically, there. Because as you're lifting the and you're turning your chest, the weight's kind of flowing into your lead foot, right? So you don't, like, I get this from amateurs all the time. I scolded. I must have lifted. I'm like, no, you didn't lift. You delivered from inside, you know? So you can see that slight lift or freedom extension through the ball, right? So that's really a great video for so many reasons. You can pause it now. So my thought would be.
And I have one more question as we kind of just sit here, maybe watch it one more time, is the concept of that a full golf swing, the difference between the sequence of somebody that's hitting a full iron shot versus right. somebody that's hitting a pitch like this, and what moves first versus what moves last. And right. and really it's a game of opposites, right?
It is. And this is one of the things I noticed when I was studying those tapes of Seve Ballesteros. I wrote about, put it in my notebook, which like I gave you when you were 10. And then ultimately Greg Rose read it as the founder of TPI, co-founder, and you know, said, I have the kinematic sequence grasp of this. I know you're correct because this, I have, this is Steve Stricker right here, and I'll show you. So in the transition in a full swing, the first thing you're getting is you load right. Now you got to land. You got horizontal force through your feet down into the ground so that ultimately you can push and rotate and pass energy onto the club. If you did that here, you'd be horrendous. So one of the things you'll see is in the transition from backswing to downswing, your legs and hips are very quiet. They don't land. The first thing that moves is really your arms and the club. So your hips are quiet. The club is going first. Now the chest rotation moves your hips around the corner. So that's literally mm-hmm. hips moving. Probably the firing would be a better way to say it. Firing last as opposed to firing first. And the people that have that sequence, not all tour players have it. There's a million ways to do it, right? But there were 11 people in the database at TPI that had this sequence, okay? And it was Steve Stricker, Luke Donald, Corey Pavin. You know, Tom pretty soon we keep running, you know what I'm saying? So that's ultimately what I noticed from Seve, what I've tried to teach you at a young age. And maybe you don't even remember learning it. I don't know. Or maybe you do.
Oh, I do. I do. It was like once the light switch came out when I was like, oh, wait, okay, so out of the top, I need to feel the club head first. Okay, that's different. And I mean, you have to have good tempo, and you have to be kind of free flowing, as you kind of described, yeah. to be able to have the patience to do that.
Right. So what I'm trying to do as a coach, Smiley, is I try to, like I said, you don't want to put coach's head on a player's body. So I'll use words that are easier to understand. I don't want you thinking about kinematic sequence when you play. I'm like, hey, okay, this way we do it. Together in the backswing, like there's a towel in your arms, tempo in the transition, it's unrust, you know, gravity's your friend. All right, then gather speed as you go, and that peak speed's in front as you're turning. Yep. You know, and so all of a sudden, you've got these sensations that create the right sequence as opposed to like, what's the sequence? How am I, you know, and I'm, does that make sense? So I'm like,
it makes perfect sense. And for instance, this shot here, we ran on a scale from 1 to 4. So 1 was our lower trajectory shot, like super right. low, almost your bump and run type of shot. Your 4 would be like your ultimate short sided flop shot. And I'm curious in your database, do you have a 4 that we can look at? Face on would be great, so we can really see kind of how similar it is to a bunker shot and how you right. set up to.
Like, there's Pernice hitting a, what I call a 2. Mm-hmm. I might have you in here, but let me just run through them first. There's Charlie Hoffman hitting a, or Charlie Wee hitting a 4. So let me see what else.
Oh, that's the one. He's so good at these 2.
Here's Pernice hitting a 3. So this is what I'll do. Okay, I'll do Pernice hitting a 2 and a 3. Or wait a minute.
Yep.
I got him the same day in the same close hitting a 2. So, all right, let me move this thing. How's that for a 2 and a 3?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, and it shows us. It just shows the how we get a little wider. The shaft comes back.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, my bad. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let me lower those. Okay. Am I ready to roll? Can I just start?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah.
All right. So, Smiley, one of the things I taught you way back was that your setup controls the trajectory. And if you can't define your trajectory, if you don't know how it's coming out, you can't pick your landing spot. So we numbered these. 1, 2, 3, 4. Low would be super. Your 2 would be your stock. So this is Tom Pernice Jr., who's maybe best on the planet. One of the best on the planet, wedge-wise. And that's a 2. And you can see he's got forward shaft lean. Look at the face. The face is always sits open. That adds bounce. Remember with the face open to the path. But if I put another line right at the front of the ball, that's what I noticed with Seve Ballesteros. I'm going to put a line on his head so you can see it go forward, then lift. But whatever angle you set it at, it returns to that same angle at impact, except at the front of the ball instead of the back. And so that's really coming in at the right angle. So right about there, it's returning more or less to the same angle. That's a good shot, okay? And then it comes right around with his chest. Well, if he's going to do that and hit it higher, he widens. This would be a 3 trajectory, all right? A 1 would be maybe behind his back foot or so that there's more shaft lean, right? Excuse me on that one. But you'll see, almost like a bunker shot, he widens and sits, lowers his hands, gets further away. And then at the bottom, that left knee stays flexed. And he at the bottom, because of that, he could throw the head of that club past the ball and around the corner. So all of a sudden,
goodness,
that's
so good.
Yeah, it's good.
Look at that extension he gets on the way back.
Now, I'm going to say this. This is probably only a 12-yard carry. But you look at the launch of that ball. This was at Des Moines in the Champions event versus the launch of that ball. And you can see the difference in trajectories, right? Well, we don't want to play a 4 very often, but I would say this. You were the master of the 4. You could hit it higher than almost anybody. And I don't have to use it. But here's Charlie Wee. This is clearly the back of the range at TPC Sawgrass, right?
Yep.
And so now he's even widened more. Look how open that face is. Now, here's the key. If you don't stabilize on this knee, if it doesn't stay flexed, because you're going to release this super shallow, otherwise you'd shank it. That left knee has to increase its flex, but like you, he'd like to keep it in front of his chest, stabilize the knee, and then throw the club past the flex knee, and then now look at that ball.
Look at that.
So that would be a 4. So when we were looking at your down the line, you were hitting a 2, but you were very good. If I searched my database in here somewhere, I'm sure I could find you hitting 2. I always feel like in a process, you know, as I'm sharing my screen, let me share my screen. Let me pull up this presentation I have, this PowerPoint presentation. So if in a process, when you're trying to picture your shot, once again, you're being Ricky Fowler and you're going, hey, I'm going to screw around and hit every conceivable type of shot I can hit. You're basically running this little process. Can you see this right here?
Yeah. All right. I see you. Great.
So what I would look at is like, okay, you're going to smile at you got a shot. Let me just pick a shot for you. Okay. One that you can visualize. Let's see. You are the pin is on the 11th green at Augusta National and it's the front left pin. Okay.
Oh gosh.
And you missed over there.
Right.
You missed over there to the right. Like you should. Now we have, where do we want to putt from? The wind, the slope, which is dead away from you, the lie, the distance, the grain of the grass, the break. And now what you got to do is you got to choose a club. So let's say you got a 12-yard carry to get it just to the fringe, which is right. What club are you going to pick for that shot?
For how fast that shot is, it's going to be my 60 degree.
Or 62 you had, right?
Yeah, I had a 62 as well. Just that always was so lie dependent, and the lies at Augusta were not as good as people think they are.
That's true. They're grainy and tough. All right. So let's say you go 62. What trajectory? Is it a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4? Well, a one might be bouncing short of the green, right? But you play a three, exactly. That one we saw Tom play.
Yeah.
Where's your landing spot? Well, basically the fringe, right? Or just on. Just left of the pin, because it's probably going to go down the hill and break to the right or whatever. Well, now you walk in clear. So when you said earlier, like, I always got that upslope and I verbalized, oh, I'm going to hit the Raymond Floyd shot. What you're doing is you're going, I'm going to hit the 62. I'm going to hit a three. I'm going to land it there. I got a picture in my head. I'm not thinking about technique. I'm thinking about my shot. I set up and then I let it fly, right? So I call that running a process. I'm going to stop share. Well, there we go. And you have to be able to run a process on every single shot. And because rule number three is you can't be distracted. You got to be clear. You got to be committed. You got to have a plan. You can't be making it up over the ball, right? Otherwise, right. Like, oh, that's when all of the what-ifs come in. So that's trajectory. That's how we did it. We did it through setup. And then the swing foundations, because we've done it through setup, for the most part, stay the same. The face is always toe up through your hands, right? The sequence is always the same. You just set up for whatever trajectory you wanted to hit.
And Seek, last little thought on that. You know, I think there's a lot of people that think that you have to hit chip shots that have a ton of spin on them. But when I've played with Steve Stricker, Luke Donald, and I watch them pitch, they're not hitting the low spinners a ton unless they have a ton of green. Most of the time, they're hitting the two, the three shot, which is the mid trajectory shot that's a little higher, but they're able to hit their spots and it has some spin on it, but they're able to, you know, when they're out of position, like at number 11 at Augusta, they're hitting their spot more often than not. They're not taking on risk with hitting the super flop shot and trying to get all this spin. And really, you know, sometimes you just got to trust your putter when you're out of position. I think I saw Luke and Steve do that more often than not. And a lot of times too, when it lands like that, it's rolling like a putt.
You are 100% true. And there are other coaches and probably players. It's like, I want to hit spin. Well, first off, you got to have the right wedge. If you're going to hit that shot, if you got a lot of bounce on your wedge, maybe it'll come out low. But if you don't, it's going to hit higher on the face and launch high. But I will say this, I patterned a little bit, or Seve, he did the same thing. He didn't do it like low checkers in there. He did it with trajectory. Think about this. How much spin? This is the ball coming down on the green, straight down. How much spin do you need it to go, not roll an inch? Zero. Yeah. It doesn't not go anywhere. So you don't need a ton of spin if you're doing it somewhat with trajectory. And you're right. Luke, Steve Stricker's balls look like when he chips them, like they're rolling like putts, and they look like they're going in.
Every time
is crazy. And I feel like Luke Donald's very similar, and that's kind of more the style I try and believe to be correct. Now, could I teach a low spinner? Yeah, I could, but I don't think it's the best way. Right now, forward shaft lean creates spin. A lot of people get that wrong. So as I lean the handle forward and open the face, I'm adding spin, but I'm also lowering the flight, right? So I'm lowering the flight and adding spin. Well, what happens? You hit that shot and you hit a hard spot on the green. It just shoots. But I feel like the ball's coming down more like Steve Stricker does it, I think is the way that you can have more control and repeatability. So
You talk about the hit a hard spot on the green. Let's talk about, you know, when there's moisture on the green and that ball skips, or when the greens are frozen like they are in Phoenix in the morning sometimes, and it just hits like a trampoline. There's just a lot to take in on shots like that. It's really cool when it works out and you get the crowd to say ooh and ah when you hit the spinner, but you know, it can be a much more efficient
I'll
shot.
I'll take Steve Stricker's short game.
And this is there's not a better transition than this than to let's talk about Steve Stricker's putting. And I think I've thought about this a lot, because Steve to me is a guy that I would put up against anybody as far as one of the best putters in the world and what he does. But you kind of discovered something about his putting. And the fact that, listen, his lines aren't necessarily perfect, but he's able to return it back to where he thinks is straight is. Is that kind of a good way of putting it?
Story, and I wrote about this in the putting book I wrote called Your Putting Solution. And it's a small sample size, so it's not fair to Steve, because maybe that was just that week or whatever. But and I've had success both ways. Charlie Weiss foundational principals putting were phenomenal as yours were, and he led the tour in putting 1 year first. However, I was waiting for somebody at John Deere. They weren't around, sitting on the putting green, and there's Steve Stricker putting. And so I took some video, and I went back to my hotel on night. I'm putting it in my computer, and I'm looking at it like I always do. And I'm like, oh, my God, Steve Stricker's putting stroke is trash. I can't believe this. Like, best putter on the planet, right? Well, I go back. I don't think anything of it. And then he shot 26 under and won the John Deere Classic by 4 shots. And so I had this thought, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I must be a horrendous coach because I just said his putting is trash and he just won by 4. And he shot like 60, you know, one day. Mm-hmm. So I looked there and then I got to thinking about it more from a coach's perspective, like curiosity. It's like, why is it so good then? Because, Smiley, you tell me this. What's the goal? Tell me the goals of putting, just one at a time. What's one skill?
Being able to start line. You I would say, like, hit it on your extended start line.
You have a picture in your brain of where this ball is going to start, right? And yeah, you got to be able to repeat, right?
Right.
Another would be you got to control the speed. So it means you got to have good rhythm. I'm looking at Steve Stricker's rhythm thinking pretty good, right?
Perfect.
And then you got to read greens, right? So I'll show you this, and I hope Steve Stricker would mind. I certainly have never asked permission. So this is the week he wins at John Deere. And I'll just play it, and you just tell me what you think, okay? Now, obviously, you don't know what he's intending, where he's going, but you can see where he's got the ball. It's sitting on the heel, right?
Yep, toe down, sitting on the heel.
Okay. Steve Stricker-like, fair? I'll play it one more time. All right, now we're going to slow it down. Now, his putter is aimed at the yellow line. You agree?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. I'm going to scroll here. You see his normal back. And he's sitting on the heel. He is at impact. The face is pointing probably 10 degrees left of where it was and where he lined it up.
He's sitting on the toe.
And he's sitting on the toe. Now, here's the deal. So I'm going, that's trash. But what if the goal was not to have a pretty stroke? The goal was to be a high performer. And Steve Stricker is visualizing his ball roll over this blue dot. Okay? That's his line to the hole. And he can do it every single time. All right. So there's number one. Can you hit your start line? Well, I'm saying, yeah, apparently he can do it every single time. But where he aimed and what it's, you know, the golf ball doesn't know where he aimed. The golf ball just knows about the collision of the putter and the ball, right?
Right.
So I always go, hey, shouldn't we be looking at this differently? Shouldn't we be, A, can you hit your start line? Can you see or feel the line? And I think feeling the line is more important than seeing it, honestly. Can you sense and control the speed? For there's wind, there's slope, there's grain, there's, you know, this green's baked out, this one's not. Can you sense and control your speed? And then this was the big one. Do you feel like the ball's going to go in? If those are the four skills, then Steve Stricker's stroke is not trash. It's like the most beautiful thing on the planet. So I always start with this. It's like we had our block practice, Smiley, but if you can hit a dime that's 2 feet in front of your ball, your ball is going to go in from 10 feet. That's just simple math. Okay. So a lot of times now when I test, I'll put a dime out there, and that's the blue dot for Steve Stricker, and just see whether you can hit it or not. Now, if you can hit it, I basically don't care how you do it, as long as you can repeat. But if you can't hit it, then that's where we're going to dive into mechanics, setup, what are you doing in your stroke? We got to develop this skill set to consistently hit our spot. Not only that, then we got to put the spot in the right place, and then we – So when we trained, you had a strain, right? Tees for toe and heel. So we hit out of the middle. But after we did that, both left to right and right to left, and we were confident that you could aim and you're hitting your spot, right? Remember like John Deere or other places where we'd take our two coins and we would put coins out in the middle and we had a game where we had to roll it between this gate and get the ball to go in the hole? Well, that's about matching line of speed. That's about seeing a curve and then matching the speed, right? So there's your three skills. I hit my spot. I proved it. I can do it right to left. I can do it left to right. Okay, now I got to be able to put my spot out there in the right place and control the speed. So that's how we trained for the most part. And then we had a process where we practice our green reading, right? Right around the hole. We did our little star drill.
Of course.
And that was it. They're pretty simple. But that's based basically on those videos from Steve Stricker. That's 25 years ago, probably.
It's fascinating looking at Steve Stricker's putting stroke and thinking, like, how does he make it in the middle of the hole every single time? But to be fair, if you got to watch him practice on the green at John Deere, a place that I don't think he's ever missed a putt at, it's probably, you know, I imagine you didn't see him miss a whole lot.
We've all been off, and that was 1 week, you know, and he putted amazing. But it's more important than that, and maybe he's perfected it, and he still putts amazing. I don't know, but the thing that boggled my brain as a coach is, like, clearly you couldn't teach that, right? But yet he was the best in the field of the best players in the world by a big margin with that. So
what does that tell you? What does that tell you?
That chasing perfect is a fool's errand. There's no, it's about performance. It has nothing to do with, oh, you should do this or you should do that. It's about, can you perform? And that's, you know, obviously, since that experience, it's more, you can talk, by the way, I care more about that than I do about, like, technical perfection things. I have my opinion, mm-hmm. but man, I just want you to play good. That's it. And yeah. So everybody has a different movement pattern based on how they move, where they're strong, where they're weak, where they're mobile, where they're, you know, and their history. And so as a coach, you're just trying to, And as a player, that more importantly, as a player, you cannot go down the rabbit hole of trying to be perfect. You're better off copying Lee Trevino than you are trying to be like Adam Scott and make it look perfect. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be yourself. And and you mentioned those coins, kind of put them about a dollar width apart. And I was going to ask you, is like, who is the best 15-foot to 25-foot putter on the tour over the last 10 years? And that answer would probably, you could argue Jordan Spieth would be one of those guys. Well, at the Ryder Cup this year, I'm sitting there just having a conversation with them. And next thing you know, I'm sitting there, it's like, oh, you got the coins out. It's like, and I was just so, I don't know why I was so surprised to see one of the best, you know, 15 to 25 footers practicing, you know, putting it through the gate, which is that gate would be about halfway point, or you put it wherever the heck you want.
The middle third. So you got to be able to predict the roll to the gate, and then obviously you got to see the last. So it makes you visualize the whole thing instead of just putting it right next to the ball. I don't think that. But anyway, Jordan Spieth, for those that's not a guess. If you look at the stats, 4 years in a row, number one putt conversion, 25 feet or longer, 4 years in a row, the same guy wins. So that's not like an accident, right? That's work.
No.
That's skill.
Yeah.
And so he's done that by developing the intrinsic sense of being able to, like, see the curve and match the speed. And now I basically stole that. And as like most things, I just watched what good players do. And I said, well, that's what I'll teach. And I've given that to Anirban Lahiri. Now, Anirban had his most phenomenal year ever last year. You know, he finished third at the Players the year before. No, second at the Players the year before. And he had 5 second place finishes this last year. And
he had 5 second place finishes last year?
3 on LIV, and then he finished second in Vietnam and second in Indonesia. He played a couple.
Okay.
So unbelievable.
That's some golf, right?
That's some golf. And it's why? Well, it's the same formula I've been sharing. He has his foundations. We check it every day. Then we just work on, like, with the coins, that's skill. We work on skill. And we talk about, like, okay, I'm not going good. Okay, what's distracting you? Well, it could be the coffee. It could be the Advil, right? It could be the 200 people, and it could be your first time watching. It could be your first time at Augusta. There's a lot of distractions. So you're trying to just push that away and stay in the moment and execute, which is what every champion has done, whether it's a football game or a basketball game or a golf tournament. You got to find a way to push all the distractions away and just execute. And so,
I mean, if this doesn't get you excited about going to work on your game, I don't know what else we could do, because James, you're not only a fantastic dude, but I've known you pretty much feels like my whole life in my golfing world. I mean, you've been such a great figure to me and mentor, and always making sure that I was listening. You know, sometimes it's very easy to get off in this game of golf, and you were always very good about keeping me on track. And for those that don't follow James, definitely give him a follow on all his social media. But also, if you want to get more in depth on all of these conversations, your short game solution and your putting solution are two books that James has been a part of that are great reads. And I would definitely lead you to figuring out, you know, some of these games that are how to compete and the block practice are all much more in depth in these books. But James, thank you again for coming on, and we're going to have to do this again sometime, right?
I'd love to do it. And Smiley, you know what? You're just not a student, man. You're part of my family. I know your granddad. I know your mom. I know your dad. I know your brother. You know, it's a thing. So I'm on your team no matter what. All right.
Well, we're only family until we get on the pickleball court. Then you throw family out the window, right?
Bring your pickleball court to Waste Management, okay?
That's where we separate friends and 100%. Friends and foes. It's like, all right, if you get up in that net, you're going to take one right to the thorax.
You bring it. I'll be ready.
All right, man. All right. Well, great. Thanks for coming on, and we'll have to do it again.
Thanks, folks.
See you soon.
All right, bye.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.